that has big time camp. What the movie will be the ultimate champ. You might be finger crazy, my finger diseased, but do you watch another chance to find the best of this?
We rate each movie in 5 categories, none of which are objective quality.
It's Stan, Gene, Jack and Nick who watch it till it's finished, because the love for this movie can be diminished. And make the film's plot has no rhyme or reason, but that's a part of charm.
Colin Brad is off the season.
It's low budget film that is most true. They find a flick that monster boogaloo.
Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
Yuck Mala, Yuck Mala. Welcome back, my friends, to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu, and I am super happy to be with you today to talk about Season 13, The World of Tomorrow, which is now Days of Future Past, and who knows what it'll be by the end of the season. It's fantastic. But I am joined by my friends, and today my friends are Nick Boxer.
Greetings and salutations. Friends, I like the upgrade. I think it was associates last time I looked. On the graph of relations, I'm glad to get the upgrade.
There you go. We try. We see the more episodes. I figure you keep going up a level. But and of course we have another one that is the guy who keeps changing what he wants to be called. The last time was it Sir Jack Hall?
I just like the fact that clearly at the beginning here, you're sitting there trying to remember our names. I see you wasting time.
I don't even know what your name is. It's just like...
So it doesn't matter. Sup, Boogers. I decided Boogers should be for Boogaloo. That should be our we're proud Boogers, and so should our listeners be.
No. Boogologists.
Sounds too high tech. Boogers for me.
All right, well, James Cotta, weigh in on the discussion. To you, sir. To you.
I've lost track of which thing I'm supposed to have an opinion on. In order, the Duke of Hall, I think is what you should call him. greetings from the future. Yes. I'm ready to talk some Boogaloo.
Ooh, Boogalites, perhaps. But... All right, and the movie that we are talking today is 2020 Texas Gladiators, which was brought to us by Jim. So
Boogers, it's a tribute to one of the two best characters from Revenge of the Nerds.
Well, it's true. I mean, we all love Booger.
Boogerians. What about that? That's like those from Boogaloo, though, rather than a...
Booger. That way it sounds classy.
Yeah, it's more like Boogaloo.
Yeah, Boogaloo. Yeah, exactly. Well, Jim, tell us about Days of Future Past, and then, of course, we get into Nick telling us about 2020 Texas Gladiators, which should be
fascinating. Do we have to have Nick do that?
We absolutely do have to have Nick do that. It's my favorite part of the show.
And besides, how else will I know what it's about?
Days of Future Past is our theme this season, season 13. And the basic premise is many films take place in the future. Many films have always taken place in the future, but having had films for 120 years, many of those future dates have now passed. So in the case of 2020 Texas Gladiators, I don't want to get too far into what year it takes place, but it is a year that we're familiar with.
Yeah, you know, if this takes place in December, we're screwed.
That's right. I gave it a little bit of an edge that probably in the next 7 months it's not going to take place, but... But I mean, I've been surprised before. I mean,
it's true. I mean, you just never know. I mean, especially these days. I mean, it could start in Italy at any time. Now, okay, so we all want it. We're all ready for it. Nick, well, okay, Nick probably not ready for it, but Nick, it's that time again.
Not ready at all, but our movie opens on a group of five. What we learn are Texas Rangers. They are raiding what looks to be a church, not raiding, sorry. They're, well, yeah, I guess they're raiding to save some civilians from some mutants in this church. They get in there. They kill all the mutants. It's awesome. But as the mutants are sort of dead, they're checking things out, make everything sure is okay. One of the Rangers gets a bad idea of raping one of the civilians, a blonde named Maida. Now, the head Texas Ranger does not like this at all and exiles him from the group. It's all dramatic. Now, Maida, fresh from almost being raped and perhaps raped immediately before by the mutants, immediately starts espousing some sort of Quaker philosophy to the head Texas Ranger. Of course, he's interested, so he follows her back to her little town where they're trying to build some sort of, or fix a nuclear generator, I think, or not, nuclear plant of some sort. It doesn't really matter. All of a sudden, we get a time skip, and, you know, he's been there for a while. Maida and him have sort of got together. They have a kid, and lo and behold, all of a sudden, the exiled Texas Ranger shows up with a group of future Nazis. Well, the villagers and are what I thought was our hero get their asses kicked by these Nazis. He is killed. It's a little bit shocking because we're sort of getting set up that he was the hero, but no, he's dead. He's gone. We never see him again. And Maida is taken and sold into slavery. At this time, we're sort of led to believe that the villages are all like killed and stuff, but we see them later. We find out, but that doesn't really matter. Now, Maida being sold into slavery happens upon one of the remaining Texas Rangers. He saves her from her predicament and gathers the other two Rangers that are still around. And I think they start going back for justice or just to save her daughter. It's really unclear the motivations. That whole Quaker philosophy is gone from this movie after that. These Texas Rangers raise an army of, believe it or not, politically incorrect red face Indians of some sort. Really, this movie is too new to have this kind of depiction of Native Americans. But, you know, we gather them up and the Indians and the Texas Rangers raid the village, kill the Nazis, and we all live happily ever after. I am taking great liberties because this movie didn't make a hell of a lot of sense a lot of the time.
This one thing that
There was two times in that description where you said the words, "It doesn't really matter," and that was the most accurate part of both times.
As I was watching this, one thing that I will say is that if somebody is going to watch this, do not watch it in multiple sittings because that goes really badly for you. I think I watched it.
I recommend that regardless, generally.
I watched it in, I think, about three and like the first 20 minutes and then I got another 20 and then I finished it. And by the end, I was just like, so who was that person? Like I had no connection between like the opening and then the end by the time I finished watching it. It was just like, oh, thank you for at least tying that part up.
Yeah, I didn't really get for the longest time that she had been with the guy that had rescued her and he was the ranger that rescued her. I just thought, you know, I don't know, because it was years later or something, and it, but there was no transition to being, it was just apparently years later.
It's just a hacked up, like hey, who cares? What goes next? Yeah. We don't put any thought into that, we just put it there.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, I would agree with you, except for the fact that the head Texas Ranger, if he is not the guy after the time skip,
No, I think he is. I'm not saying he isn't.
He has to be because he doesn't show up again. Like, he could have come back later in the movie, and I would have gone, oh, that wasn't the guy. Because the older Texas Ranger, the guy who died, they didn't look like he didn't look exactly the same. I don't think they put a beard on him or something.
Yeah, I don't remember him looking like that. But I mean,
have trouble recognizing people in overalls for some reason. So.
it's total sense. Yeah,
he's got a beard in both sections. So yes, it is the same guy. Okay. he's a blonde
maybe
guy with
he has
blonde
a hat
beard
or something.
He's a blonde guy with a blonde beard. Yes, it's the same guy. In fairness, in a half an hour in, and that guy gets killed, and I'm like, he wasn't the main character again. Yes. We've had this before, where it's like I've started to get to know this guy, I started to get to know his motivations, and he's dead. Okay.
It would help if the guy who actually ended up being sort of the male protagonist had some sort of, you know, memorable quality whatsoever.
If anybody had a memorable quality.
Discount James Francis?
Discount James who?
Discount James, what's his name? Francisco? Franciscus?
Franciscus, yeah, I believe. Yeah,
Franciscus. From. I said it right the first time.
Or actually, if his name was at all memorable. Like, I think his name was Jack.
Yeah, that's all? Completely forgettable. Yeah.
Yeah, nobody should be named Jack. That's just a stupid name.
Yeah, no, if his name was Snake Plissken, I would have remembered.
Well, when you think about the one character being named Catch Dog, now, I mean, that's
God,
a memorable name. But
I didn't know that was a name. I thought I was missing something there.
But it's not cool. Like you think about, like, okay, Snake Plissken, it helps with that Kurt Russell is playing the character and is automatically memorable as Snake Plissken. So, I mean, that lives. But, I mean, Catch Dog is just one of those cases where it's just like, no, that doesn't sound like a thing. That actually sounds like something you would do. Like, oh, you threw the dog at me. I will catch dog.
That's usually what I'm thinking. Like,
how does that go?
What a wonderful catch dog that was.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a catch 22, it's a catch dog.
No, this movie's like, okay, I'd like to start a new segment now that we've gotten past that. Let's do this. Maybe we'll do this. Maybe this will take off. Maybe this won't. Maybe you guys won't. But let's do this. Let's do a segment called What Did This Film Teach Me? And here's what this film taught me. Two things. Number one, don't worry, in the future, in an apocalypse, all the women will still be smoking hot. And number two, in the future, the technology to make bras will be lost. Now, these are my top two takes away from this movie. But this movie is also super philosophical for no reason whatsoever. This movie teach any of you guys anything?
Absolutely. I have wondered about the idiom back to the salt mines for many years. Like, I don't know that salt mines is a bad job. I've never been to one. And yet when I say back to the salt mines means back to hard work. This movie, I have seen salt mines, sucky job.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I learned from this movie.
Yeah. Anybody else learn anything?
I mean, I learned that you have to prove your manliness in battle. You know, if you want to have natives join you because they don't care about the white man or anything like that.
The movie was made in 1983, I think, in Italy. Yeah. So, you know, as much as Nick said, it is, you know, too recent for to have those kind of depictions. Unfortunately, you know, back then you'll still have.
Lone Ranger was only like 4 years ago or something.
Yeah, I was shocked after the first few minutes and nobody said how Kimasabi.
I did learn one other thing though. I learned that when they focused on like in the time of, you know, in the apocalypse, like the, you know, as you were saying, they build out certain things. I mean, we learned from Creepazoids that they built out squirt guns, you know, laser squirt guns. Well, in this case, they decided rather than upgrading, you know, working conditions or living conditions or vehicles, that they would invent really, really crazy shields that prevented bullets, but not bows and arrows.
Yeah. The shields that stop heat. So
yeah, yes.
Completely useless.
Wait, that was bows
and arrows.
I thought it was metal.
Don't worry, in the future, the natives will still be using regularly.
Well, because, you know, I mean, again, they were very much, it was very much their depiction of the natives was like they picked up a book from, say, probably 1950, read it through, and it was just like, that's what Native Americans are like.
No. Well, they didn't read the book, they looked at the pictures.
But that's kind of the aesthetic through the whole thing, is this takes place in Texas, and is made by people who have no idea what Texas is like, because the only thing that really says Texas is there's a covered wagon at one point. One of the buildings has like a old timey barbershop sign painted on the side of it, like a Western town. Like it's like they had a leftover theme park or something, or that this was the set from a Western that they're like, okay, well, we've got a Western, we got some costumes for Native Americans. So we can work this. We can make this happen.
Are you suggesting?
It kind of makes sense because there is, to a degree, this film, like we talked about, you know, Creepazoids, and was like, oh yeah, that was the thing, an alien kind of, and Cool Hand Luke was the last last drive in or whatever that one was, and Dead End Drive In. So this is kind of like a little bit like Magnificent Seven, a little bit.
Well, I mean, with the exception of a couple of of like the force shield and stuff and motorbikes, it is basically a Western.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the, it would be familiar to see these tropes in like a Clint Eastwood movie or a John Wayne movie. You know, there's a bit of Lone Ranger in this, like the Ranger's killed and they need revenge. Like it's a lot of Western tropes, but you know, no horses.
No, you know, no like, horses. Future, they become food.
Well, no, yeah, the natives rode horses.
Well, that's true. They did.
It's like grassy Mad Max. It's
Well, I mean, that's, you know, it's shocking, of course, to think that Italians would attempt to do something in a Western format. You know, that almost never happens.
I don't know.
It's.
I had higher expectations, put it that way.
Honestly, the title was great.
I thought there was going to be gladiators in this movie, so.
Yeah, there is really no gladiators.
Yeah.
It's strange that the Italians didn't understand gladiators either. that one they should have gotten.
That's a good point.
Give them that they don't understand Texas, but, you know, that's kind of their thing. Like, they...
Now, was 2020 Texas Rangers a bad title? Is that why they use it's right there. They're Rangers. They go through a lot to like establish that.
And one of the titles that they have is 2020 The Rangers of Texas. But I mean, it I guess the problem is it doesn't sound futuristic. Whereas I don't know. Like 2020 Texas Gladiators sounds a tad more futuristic to me.
And this is directed by Joe D'Amato, who directed like every genre of film, including Westerns, everything, and including a lot of it. Hey, his career probably in the adult industry was probably a Cop Sucker and Cop Sucker 2. I think those were probably his his highlights as an adult film director. But yeah, I mean, this is a, I mean, it's got that, it's definitely got a sleaze to it, but I don't know that it's, I don't know, something's wrong. You know what I mean? Something's wrong with this movie.
It just doesn't, it doesn't quite, it's not quite all there. Like, it's like they have this idea, but they weren't quite aware enough of how to fully flesh it out to make it. Because that was the thing, right? Like, they did a great job when we talk about spaghetti westerns and stuff like that. There's a lot of spaghetti westerns, and not, you know, I mean, we're not talking about, like, the best ones, the ones that Clint Eastwood were in, but there's still a lot of spaghetti westerns that are good quality western stories. This is just one of those where it's just like, this is a story that's kind of slapdash, you know, just tossed down. It's got some future, it's got some, a lot of past, it's got, you know, it's a melange of everything. And just doesn't quite come together in the way that we might hope.
I think that pretty much sums it up. So, sounds like we need to get to scoring.
Feels like it. Unless Jim, you've got something to add.
No, I don't think so.
No. Nothing else it taught you?
I never heard it taught Nick anything, but...
Nothing's ever taught Nick anything.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Nick had to do the...
Our next episode, you know, I gained education on, so I'm willing to let this one go.
It is. There's a recurring theme that the future tends to be rapey.
Is this our rapiest film ever?
I think
this is our that's saying something.
Mm. On my description, I almost opened this one up with. In a post-apocalyptic future where consensual sex was no longer a thing.
it really could be the rapiest film we ever done. And that's, you know, I mean, that's...
Oh, I do, we, no, no, no. We've done rapier films.
Really? Name it. Give me the rapier film.
Gutterball.
That's, yeah.
The one rape, fair, but yeah. You have to admit that the rape in that one is...
It's extraordinarily over the top.
It's the rapiest scene ever in rape. I mean, it makes the scenes in, you know, I Spit on Your Grave look like... look like a children's movie. So yes, right. I see what you're saying.
In our search for the ultimate B movie, we rate each film in 5 categories. None of these categories is objective quality. The first category we call schlock appeal, and we start with Stan.
There's definitely a level of schlock because of the volume of different elements, you know, disparate elements in this case. I have a hard time calling it appealing because it's a struggle to watch, mostly because of the fact that it just hops back and forth with some of the, you know, without a lot of transitions and a lot of the, you know, settings and that kind of thing. So I think it's really hard to follow. And because of that, I can only give it a 4.
Yeah, I think it wanted to be schlocky, but the laziness just... didn't push it that far. I mean, it's there. I mean, the title is there. You want it to be schlockier, but they didn't have enough energy to make it really stand out at all. I'll go as high as a 5. They tried and failed.
I mean, I don't think it's that they wanted to make it schlockier. I try and avoid, as a matter of fact, the Italian films and B movies because they're just by their nature kind of like this and kind of schlocky. Like, that's the one thing it really does have to me, is it's schlocky because that's what these, you know, Italian movies are from that era. So I mean, I'd give it a 7 in schlock appeal, but I mean, you know, it has a lot of that, but you know, storytelling, I'd probably give it a little less. It makes some interesting choices. The whole fact that they went to the mine to assault in the middle of for no apparent reason just to fill time was an interesting choice, but yeah, 7.
Seven's what I'm going with too. I think the pitch of it is strong. I think I think you know, the title sounds schlocky. It's if you saw a trailer for this, it would work for you. As far as you know, motorbike gangs and saving the villagers. So yeah, 7 for me. More heart than budget, and I don't think we have a stated budget of this one.
No, there's not a ton of, you know, info about this movie.
I mean, this is so hard because it's so by the numbers. Like, it's just, you know, we point the camera, we make things happen. We get people to ride horses, we get people to ride motorcycles. I mean, we try to put a story out there. 5.
Yeah, I really get the feeling that, you know, everyone's competent enough, I guess. It really doesn't matter for this genre or this time in Italian cinema. I do get the feeling that although they have a lot of talented people there, everybody there, it was just a Tuesday. On Thursday, they'd show up and shoot a different type of movie. I mean, they were just churning these things out. So no one really cared about this film in particular. I'll give it a 4.
Rather than give my score, I'd like to get instead skip that and get Nick to explain how there was a lot of talented people in this.
The blonde bearded dude had a bunch of actually really good cowboy films. They're one. And I mean, the director, I mean, you don't have a career that long with being completely incompetent.
No. I mean, you can't make Cop Sucker unless you're a really talented dude.
Okay, that's where he ended up. That's not, the prime of his career. I'm sure there's a lot of talented people who end up in porn. That's
we've established that you don't have to be talented to have a long career in film.
All right. So here's for me, it's like you're a film in the future, and as far as like future tech or special effects or any of that, there's nothing. Like there's no effort to put this in the actual future. Like, you know, Cryptozoids at least had that. Three.
I think there's some scenery chewing. There's several times where I think they're reusing extras, because they frame away from faces or they have hats pulled down. So that happens in the bar scene and it happens in the salt mine they've got masks on in the salt mine. So I think they were stretching their bucks. So I'll go up to a 6.
You know what? I'm going to go a little higher because, like I said, it's super philosophical. So I do think that they thought they were making something more high art than they were. This is super philosophical. So I'm going to go to a 4.
All right. What the fuck moments?
This, when I was watching this one, it was one of those cases. And of course, because I watched it in a few different installments, I think that I didn't wind up writing anything down for it because I just kept watching it, waiting for something that I thought was like, whoa, something's gonna come and it's gonna be like crazy, what the fuck. And really, I didn't find that very much. Like, I mean, I found like the editing to be what the fuck, but I mean, that's hard to qualify for this award in this case. What I really guess I found more so than anything was the first time you see the shields, and these guys are coming out with the shields and they've got these really giant holes in the front, and I'm like, not really sure what that shield is going to do for you against a gun, but you know, and then of course you can see that the bullets like ping off of the magical shield, and of course the shields actually seem to cover more than just the space of the shield. It's like the closer that you get, the more energy radiates out from them and keeps you safe. But of course, they're not good against arrows. And yes, it was impressive that when they met the Native Americans, that they had devolved, I guess, down to a state of bows and arrows again. There's nothing that really stands out to me as being like super WTF crazy. So I'm only going to go with a 4.
Okay. Before I score, I do have a couple questions about WTFs in this film.
Fair enough.
Because it could be just I didn't understand the motivations of the first one.
Yeah,
now, the guy who I thought was our hero in the first battle with the Nazis has a chance to shoot his ex-best friend that's coming to raid, but instead he backs off and then aims again and shoots his girlfriend off the back of his motorcycle. Did we know her? Was there a reason that he decided to kill the girlfriend instead of just ending this movie by killing the guy who, you know, was for most principal reasons the bad guy of this film?
I have no idea what you just said. The girl on the back of the bike, I'm with you, I know the Texas Rancher
got shot in the middle of the head. He aimed carefully to do that. Why didn't he just kill the guy on the front of the bike? He was in the sight. It would have ended the movie right there. I just didn't get what was going on there. I thought maybe she was in an earlier scene.
It needed to be another.
I think structurally, like the movie has to be longer. I mean, for story wise, no, I don't know why he shot her. Like, I mean, she's not even armed. Like, that's like, big hero. Like, shoots the one unarmed person in the entire battle.
I just didn't get what was going on there. I thought there was something weird there. The other scene is actually in the climatic, the battle at the end, the huge thing going on. The one Texas Ranger that actually dies, of the initial Texas Rangers. He gets shot, but the bad guy is aiming through two of our other heroes in this movie. He's on the wrong side of the gun. It was really, it was just probably an editing thing, but it was weird anyway. Because our heroes that survive are actually closer to the bad guy than the guy who dies. It was strange. Especially getting shot with what I think is a shotgun. I can only give it I'll go 5.
All that leads to 5.
Well, no, I mean, this is not a well-constructed movie. It's a little confusing at times. I just thought maybe you guys could, you know, elaborate. Maybe I just didn't understand.
So, oh, man. Okay. I really have trouble trying where to go off that for some reason. It's a movie. You know, like you said, there wasn't a whole bunch of WTFs. Like it's unfortunate. It just lacked them. So I'm going to say the only one that to me and it made me laugh was when the guys with the shields were coming and dude front somersaulted over them and just like this crazy, ridiculous, like dumb looking thing. And I'm like, where the hell did that come from? It just seemed really out of place. But other than that, yeah, I just didn't see this. The WTFs, they should have been there. Everything about this movie screams it should have been there and wasn't. Like, everything about this movie screams it should have been there and wasn't. So, what do you guys say? 3?
I think there's an early scene where our temporary hero, at the beginning of the film, first goes to the whatever
Rick,
this
Rick the temp of
again whatever yeah exactly yeah. Whatever this place is that this takes place. I don't read nuclear power plant, but some sort of steam thing. It has, like, they go into great detail about something that's gone wrong, and all I wrote down is this is a lot of information on whatever's going on. because I couldn't figure out what was going on, but just there was a tremendous amount of unpacking there for something that's never important again later. Also, it's really poorly defended. Like, it kind of reminds me of that, like, the spot in Mad Max was way better protected than this thing. It's like, I mean, the same thing happened in one of the ones we did last season, that James Franco one. Oh no, we didn't even do it. That's right. One we almost did. So we won't get into that.
And that movie that we were going to do that we never did? Yeah, don't talk about that. That's probably for the best.
The Russian roulette scene.
Oh boy, yeah.
So it kind of structures this that the old guy at the table is really good at Russian roulette. And I can't figure out how you get at Russian roulette.
See, I read that he was cheating somehow because our hero didn't actually point the gun to his head when he did it. So I think there was some sort of trick it was a trick gun or something, because they made him, or he used a different gun. It was something that was not clear in that scene.
You've fallen into the trap I often fall into of explaining something the movie didn't.
He shoots it in the head, and then they're like, that didn't count, or shoots it in the air, but it wasn't a bullet, so he's like, that counted. And they're like, that didn't count. Like, so they take out a gun and point at him and go, no, it counted. And they go, all right, it counted.
And then, of course, the gun shoots the other guy, because, you know, he finally sucked at...
These are heroes. I think that's the part that needs to be kind of, re-examined, perhaps, to a degree.
They don't tolerate rape, though, so there you go.
Also, I'm not 100%, but I'm fairly certain that one of the extras in that scene is a woman with a fake mustache on. I'm gonna pull a screenshot and we'll discuss this off air. But I'm pretty sure it's a.
I can't. Pull that screenshot right now. If there's ever a conversation I needed to have, that was it.
So I'm gonna give it a 5.
I think that's fair. All of a sudden.
Memorable moments.
Memorable moments. Well. All those memorable moments that make up this film here. 2020 Texas Gladiators. I'm not likely to remember it at all. I'm going to go with 3.
Yeah. Oh, it's not my turn. Go ahead.
I'm pretty sure I was forgetting stuff while I was watching this movie.
2. Oh. Nice. All right.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. Like, I watched this really recently. Totally don't remember the movie very well. So it's an absolute failure there, unfortunately. 3 sounds about right. And I had high hopes for this movie.
3 is what I'm going to do as well. It was tough to bring this back to my head when it was time to record, for sure. So the last category is called Crazy Concept.
You know, this is, I think, going to be one of those problems that we run into during this season when you have that whole Mad Max future element. It's really hard to make it different because you're automatically ripping off Mad Max. And so when you talk about...
In theory, all have to rip off Mad Max. They just are.
They just are, yeah. And that's exactly right. Like, I'm sure there's something that, you know, but the second that you go post-apocalyptic, then so often, you know, it just...
Rip off Mad Max.
No, for sure. But, you know, the second that you go post-apocalyptic, and the Apple, is the Apple post-apocalyptic? I don't think so, but...
I don't know.
But the second that you go there, yeah. I think that's where it goes. It's suddenly it's just like, oh, it's Mad Max. And I mean, I know in this case, like, they just decided to just make it. This is a moneymaker. So, I mean, it's Mad Max. It's a Western. I can only give it a 2.
Yeah. Everyone showed up to work one day and said, what was the hot genre? We have a Western script, but Westerns aren't doing that well. Well, let's throw some future stuff in there. Yeah, it's not that crazy. It just, I mean, it's a little crazy, but not insane. Three.
Yeah, that's about right. Unfortunately, it's just not crazy enough. You know, I feel like this, I really, did I mention I was disappointed? I had high hopes. You know, I'll give them one credit for one thing. Just to go back a category, just that whole thing where they invaded the place, you know, where they were, and they came out with the shields and they set up the ramps and stuff like that. That was really pretty well coordinated and thought out. So I'll try to give him credit for one thing before I say, yeah, crazy concept isn't there. Three.
I had forgotten about that that little ramp thing. I mean, it was clever, and it really played on the fact that the defensive fortification was only 3 feet tall. That's a. I mean, if they had had a 5 foot wall, the entire offensive would have fallen apart.
if they had a wall, for the most part.
Yeah, yeah. If they had made any single effort towards a protective force.
You would think, though, that something that was actually important would have been defended, but that was not part of their thought process. It was just kind of like, oh, wow, no way. So they want this important thing? What? Well, it's sure a good thing.
Do we know why it was important? Oh, yeah, because it was a place.
No, I couldn't figure out why it was important. They really, really wanted it, though.
Yeah, they sure did.
They really did.
So I've gone higher on this. I think you didn't give it enough credit. I'm giving it a 4.
Well, now I feel like a fool not giving it enough credit. Yeah, yeah. Knowing that it could have gotten a 4.
A full 4. Yeah.
All right. All right. Well, it falls within the time at the plus or minus time, so does not get any changes there, which brings it to a...
Now with less modifiers.
Now, each season we have no secret modifiers. This film gets none of them.
no secret modifier. Very limited.
Which leaves it a total of 41 out of 100, which puts it between Shoot Fighter, Fight to the Death, and Battle in Outer Space.
Which I definitely rather watch both of them, although Shoot Fighter, I don't remember very much of.
Yeah.
Battle in Outer Space, now that one. But, so, I think that's the thing, like, we all had these high hopes going into this that, you know, it's like, oh, 2020 Texas Gladiators, they're going to be awesome, and then at the end, we're kind of like, no.
Well, yeah, would this movie have been better if the title was worse? Because it really sets you up for some disappointment.
The old overpromise, underdeliver thing.
Yeah, for sure. Well, not much left to say on that one, I guess, thankfully. So our next episode, I think we might have a little bit more to say, because that one's Omega Cop. And Jim, let's do some business.
All right, we are sponsored by We Talk Podcasts. Their website, wetalkpodcasts.com, is the home of the Octagon, where you can keep track of our search for the Ultimate B-Movie. Also, they have a Facebook and they have a Twitter. And we are on Instagram at Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Please subscribe to the show on YouTube or your favorite podcast app.
That's right. Subscribe often.
Should start asking people to subscribe on their least favorite podcast app.
Or just all of them.
You know, just to get that, all of them. Make it special.
All of them, so it's just ready to go, any app that you're on.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, you just never know what you're doing or when you're doing it. So we want you to be able to access the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo at any given moment.
That's right. Every device, have them get separate accounts and subscribe. Just in case you have to change your identity, you need that too.
That's right. For every identity you have, you should follow the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Yeah. All right. Well, next episode, we are going to talk
about... You're laughing like this isn't a good idea.
Yeah. Establish your cover. Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. Omega Cop, because if you're going to establish a cover, then you'll want to establish it as Omega Cop, let me tell you. But, so be prepared to tune in for that one, because I think we'll have some chatting. Anybody else have anything else to say before we sign off on this one? Nope, apparently not. That's good stuff. So, for Jim and for Jack and for Nick, I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu, and thanks for listening to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo!
One real, true, strong, and reliable force to emerge from the ruins of the atomic war. Any who oppose us are bound to fail. I'm going to show you how we stop these primitives. Indians.